Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Welcome to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. The number here is 1-888-627-6008. Tonight we're going to do a book discussion, and the book is called Don't Worry, There Probably Is an Afterlife.
You know what?
What?
It's Stop Worrying, There Probably Is an Afterlife.
Stop Worrying. Something like
that. Yeah, but don't worry.
Either way, don't bother your little...
And our normal gathering crew is here, Tom and Melissa Gould, and Fran is here, and I'm here, and we're going to be talking about this book. And before we get started on the book, and I hope somebody out there has read it along with us,
yeah. We
have some exciting announcements, and Fran's going to bring us up.
Yes. Okay, so we'll start off with the reminder, always check the events page on our website and do that regularly. And just to let our listeners know what might be coming up this April that might interest them, we have our Visionary Explorers group on Saturday, April 9th. That's free. Our afterlife discussion group in Sanibel, Florida on Sunday, April 10th, that's also free. And also in April, we have our super webinar scheduled for this coming Wednesday, April 13th, 9 p.m. Eastern, and streaming live on your computer from wherever you are, Anomalous Experiences of the Bereaved with Cal Cooper. There are limited free seat codes for members. I'm going to give that to you right now. If you want a free seat and you're listening, it's phone calls, one word, all capital letters. If you're a member and you'd like one of those free seats, there are a limited number of them. See if you could grab one of them. And for our non-members, we'll give you a code, too, for a half-price seat. And that code is Cooper, all capital COOPER. Okay. In April, we also have Dessert and Discarnates. It's scheduled for April 15th. It is filled. It's a wonderful event. And if you're interested in attending a small group event like this, please check it out on the website and then send us an email with your interest, and we will get back to you when we schedule the next one. And April 22nd is not only Earth Day, but it's the day we draw the five winners of our Holiday of the Earth raffle. Five people will each win a one-hour medium reading with our Forever Family Foundation certified mediums, Amy Utzman, Renee Buck, Dave Campbell, Lynn LeClaire, or Bobby Allison. You really need to enter if you appreciate good odds of winning. Currently, only 90 people have entered. And even if you don't win, the money goes to support all of the free services we offer. So please, be generous. You never know just who will be touched by your kindness. Our annual grief retreat has enjoyed an early round of reservations for our 50 spots. Spend a weekend in a beautiful and peaceful setting with like-minded people, all learning that our loved ones are still with us. The weekend is an all-inclusive and features spirit communication with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums, Joe Shield, Janet Nohavik, and Joe Peretta, who are all working alongside our other professionals and facilitators. It also includes a variety of activities and small breakout workshops, all designed to heal. People have attended this yearly event from around the globe, and many return year after year for the new and special experiences. So please be sure before making your reservations, as we must maintain a no-refund policy. Also, a bit of information, 33 of the 50 spots have already been taken, mostly by attendees seeking single rooms, which means that there are very few rooms left on premises. And anybody else wanting to attend once those rooms are filled, we will have a list of nearby hotels that you can stay at and scoot over to Guest House in Chester and join the rest of the group. But just to let our listeners know, we are running out of rooms right now. And please, please, please help us keep all of our programs going by visiting our website and clicking on the donation button. It's on every page. Because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that other traditional not-for-profits enjoy. You can also help us pay our bills by participating in iGive.com, Amazon.com, Great Not-Profits, and WellZoo. Just remember to name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice in all of those cases. And again, I'm going to remind you to visit foreverfamilyfoundation.org for all the event links, information, and registration for all of our events. And lastly, if you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at businessmembership@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. All done.
Okay. And tonight's show is sponsored by the Comlock Center, and you can find them on the web at Comlock, K-A-M-L-A-K.com. So the title that I got wrong already, Stop Worrying, There Probably Is an Afterlife. What was your reaction when you first saw that title? It's a little bit unusual. So what were your thoughts like?
I wasn't worried.
So what do you think that he titled it that
way? Well, a lot of people are, of course.
Right. Yeah. But what Stop Worrying meaning about dying.
Right.
Yeah. And there probably is an afterlife, meaning there's going to be more.
There is more than what we're doing here, yeah.
So, but the word probably is
right.
Well,
italic.
It's not proven.
That's what disturbed me about the title.
Right.
I didn't look at it that way. When it was stop, I wasn't worried to begin with, and I said, stop worrying, there probably, now he's making me worry, there probably. I really thought there was.
Right.
I knew that there was, and now he's saying probably.
Well, he's not preaching to the choir, in other words.
Right,
he's
right.
Trying to convert people, and most people, when you say, oh, there's an afterlife, they say, I don't believe it. So you say, well, slow down, there probably is one, and if you read my book, by right. the end of it, you'll see, oh, there probably is one.
Right, because
exactly.
His approach is very educational. So it's not like he's trying to convert the reader. He's giving them the information they need to make their own.
Right, and his point was, you know, don't just believe blindly, you know, evaluate, learn, and come to your own conclusions. As it turned out, he explains that the reason he titled the book that way is that's what he said to his dying father. He was talking to his dad as his dad was nearing, you know, the end of the life, and they were talking about things, you know, about the afterlife, and you know, and he said, you know, stop worrying, Dad, you know, there probably is an afterlife. And then that led him further on his, because he always believed it, on the journey of mm-hmm. this exploration. So it makes more sense when we, you know, when we put it in perspective. So,
sure.
But I admit, like, when I first saw it, I had the same kind of, I don't like to say probably in anything, right? You know.
Yeah, we're taught not to, really, by Eckhart Tolle and everything. It's more like, there is.
Yeah.
And one point that he does make in there is that, you know, there's a huge percentage of the population that believes that there's an afterlife kind of blindly, you know, mainly because of their religion tells them itself. So they go through life. But it doesn't form a foundation for true belief. You know, it's not like the personal experiencers who believe because of direct personal evidence. So, you know, which made me think, you know, maybe the worldview will be changed when the personal experiencers outnumber the blind faithers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Possibly that's what it's going to take. I know my mom, who's nearing the end of this life cycle, I don't think she's that near to the end because she's still not believing in this. And just some of the things that were stated in the book, I would say, you seeing anybody? You're not going anywhere because she's not getting any of those visitors or from the other side. But I'm just wondering if that would be some indication when she truly is ready to cross over that she starts to believe a little bit more or experience something. But right now she just says, No, nothing's been shown to me to make me believe.
Right, and then, but that whole thing could be turned around real quick with an experience. You know, I don't know if you recall reading in the book, but the author, Greg Taylor, talks about he had an experience once where he had an allergic reaction to a wasp bite, and he went into that, what do you call that when you have that, I forgot the term.
Anaphylactic shock
or whatever, yeah. An allergic reaction, and he almost died. And he went on to explain that he had no NDE, had no experience. He had no, he didn't see any, another classic, he didn't see the light, he didn't see a tunnel, and he was disappointed,
yeah.
You know, disappointed because, you know, because he didn't experience a lot of these things that he had, you know, read about, which made me think, do you think, well, if you were in the same, if you had a brush with death, you think you would be disappointed if you didn't?
Well, it's funny you should ask me that, Bob, because all that came back to me as I read that in the book, because I feel like I did. And when I was having my son and I had no blood pressure, and they all told me afterwards they thought they lost me. And then I thought, well, then how come I didn't have a near-death experience? However, from some of the things I've read, the medications that one might be given could suppress that memory.
Oh.
And then when I did have an extremely vivid dream that's still with me now, maybe 10 years later, it sounded exactly like the NDEs, and it still is with me to this day. So I think I did have one. But my reaction was, yeah, I was chipped. Where was my NDE?
Yeah, I know. We'll discuss more of that, but we're a little bit late on the break, so we're going to take a break. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk about pick up where you just left off. So stay with us. Be back in a few minutes.
The Camlack Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the Camlack Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlack.com. That's KAMLAK.com for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one. Learning to Dance in the Rain, a true story about life beyond death. When 21-year-old Maya dies in a tragic car crash, her parents begin to experience profound synchronicities, prophetic dreams, guidance from mediums, and the undeniable truth that death is not the end. Lori and Brian McDermott share their story, hoping to help others find strength and inspiration to face whatever storms life may bring. Learn more about this important book at www.learningtodanceintherain.net. That's www.learningtodanceintherain.net.
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world. But for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential. And research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
And welcome back to The Gathering. The number here is 1-888-627-6008. We're having a discussion about a book written by Greg Taylor called Stop Worrying, There Probably Is an Afterlife. And as you recall from reading the book, he's writes a lot about end-of-life experiences, especially, you know, deathbed visions. And he talked about a study that was done, a British study by Peter Fenwick was one of the researchers, and they found, they were trying to find out what percentage of doctors, nurses, and hospice carers have witnessed an end-of-life experience, such as deathbed vision. You recall what the percentage was? Or without, if you don't, what would you say, Fran, if you had a guess among that group? Doctors, nurses, and hospice workers, how many people, what percentage of the patients had an end-of-life experience?
Wait, of that whole group altogether?
Yeah.
Am I following the question?
How many doctors,
how many
nurses, and hospice workers have witnessed patients having an end-of-life experience?
But you want a percentage.
Yeah. 10%, 50%, 90%? Okay.
I think it was high.
We were talking about this the other day.
Yeah, I think it was high. Wasn't it?
It was higher than I expected.
Yeah, I mean, it was 60, two-thirds. 66%. So, I mean, if you...
They have reported it. Right.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you... I think if we asked the average person that's not familiar with it and you explain what they were, they might say to you, oh, you know, 1%, 2%.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds so bizarre if you're not familiar with it. But that's a lot.
Well, you know, and the way you asked the question, I think if you broke those groups down,
right,
the amount of doctors would be a low percent who would admit to that, and the amount of hospice workers would be through the roof.
That's true. It's true. There's a certain stigma. He also, you know, addresses why among the two, you know, deathbed visions and near-death experiences. Near-death experiences are more readily discussed by the lay people and professional people, whereas deathbed visions are not, you know, by family and by the other groups. And he was exploring some of the reasons why. I mean, one of the obvious ones is that the near-death experiencers all come back
right.
to tell
they're
their story.
Still around to tell the story.
And a lot of people that have these deathbed visions don't come back or never, they may be too incapacitated to express that,
And often the family member isn't there at the time.
Right. That's
so only,
nobody's in the
only
room with
the
them.
Professionals see it. And, you know, as I remember from, Evan Alexander's book, you know, something that he's ashamed of now, is he tells about the rote answers to what if a patient tells them that they've experienced something like this, and he had his list of doctor things to say to them to dismiss that sort of thing.
Right.
Up until he had his eyes opened.
And then totally different perspective.
Yeah, I'll say.
Yeah. In that Fenwick study, he was one of the first to attribute these experiences, not to attribute these experiences to drug interactions, you know, or confusion or confused thinking or unclear consciousness. So, and his conclusion, or the study's conclusion, was that they were important spiritual events and had deep meaning to the experiencer. Well, that's interesting. I mean, do you think of a deathbed vision as a spiritual event?
Well, why not? It's a spirit.
You're being visited by it.
Right. So who's initiating it? So do you think that it's the loved one on the other side, the discarnate person that's initiating the contact?
I believe they're coming. They're able to make themselves visible to the loved one, either through an unknown sense, a subconscious sense, but they're able to see them. Because I don't believe, was it reported that anyone else in the room, I know they reported hearing music and other things, but did anyone report actually seeing the person that the person dying saw?
Yeah.
They saw them too?
Yeah, shared death experiences, which many people have written about, where the family members sitting at the side of the dying person have witnessed the same vision as the dying person, which is so important because how do you say that it's the product of their the patient's medication or confused thinking? The family members were not medicated, you know. So that's you know. But I think of it. The reason I ask the question is that I do think of it that way. It is a spiritual event in the sense that people on the other side who watch over us are taking an interest and guiding us through this door or whatever we want to call it, as opposed to the patient, you know, somehow manufacturing it or summoning. Although, who's to say that it's not a little of both, you know? Maybe the patient has this inner sense and has this great desire to see their deceased loved one, and they play a role in making it happen.
I like the story, the anecdotes in the book, and there was someone who was seeing, I think it was in the instance they cited, maybe the grandmother, and the woman was dying, but she's like, wait a minute, I just have to give a few more instructions here to those I'm leaving behind.
And then
she goes, I'm coming, Grandma.
Well, it's kind of what my dad did, actually, because he had a near-death experience with the tunnel and his Army, Navy buddies, and all their saying, come on. And he came back to deliver a message for our daughter, and then a week later, he was gone. And so that's an example of that, but wait a minute, let me just do this, and then I'll go with you kind of thing. You know, it's interesting you should say that, whether the patient themselves are manifesting this, because, you know, in all of the readings that we've done, I'm getting a good idea of how I believe it all works. But I recently read Lloyd Auerbach's book. It's got paranormal in the
paranormal casebook.
The one. And this is something I hadn't known before I read his book. That when he talks about different spiritual events, paranormal events, one of them was poltergeist, and he said that a poltergeist is usually a manifestation of maybe a teenage girl, you know, or you know, that a youthful person with a lot of hormones can actually create the, you know, the smashing of dishes and the things that you attribute to a poltergeist, and that kind of opened my eyes to Wow, I didn't know that. And have to...
Like energy from them emanates in the form of...
Yeah, because of their angst, the teenage angst and that sort of thing. And I guess a feeling of helplessness, hopelessness as in their position as a young person that they have no control over their life. It manifests itself into these experiences that when they call in Ghostbusters or investigators like Lloyd, they find out that, no, it's not coming from there, it's coming from your kid.
And that would be an example of something that most people would not consider to be a spiritual event or anything to do with the afterlife.
Exactly.
You know, this...
We are just scratching the surface of what we are capable of as humans in our human form. I mean, we've all sort of, you know, lockstep to just walking one step at a time and getting through this life. And when I hear about things like that, there's probably a whole untapped. And you hear about the Buddhists that can elevate, or in Tibet when a group of people get together and through their minds can lift huge stones up to heights and that sort of thing, that we're so
baby steps.
Yeah, we've put shackles on ourselves.
Right. We have such a way to go, because the bottom line is the commonality of all of these things is energy.
Yeah.
And we are so accustomed to categorizing things and putting them either here or there instead of understanding and allowing for them to overlap, and that we're not looking at them the right way. So we're not looking at energy as a whole. We're saying, okay, this is psychokinesis, and this is a spiritual event, and this is a near-death experience, when they all are related on the energy level. And if we would start to look at it scientifically from there, which I think some places are... but again, going back to that same thing, there's no funding for this stuff. Mm-hmm. We would get, it's like you say, it's like we're creeping and we're crawling and we're not getting it because there's just not enough money for all this research.
Yeah. Well, if it's in the name of healing, you know, for instance, which is psychokinesis, mind affecting matter, you know, one's own mind can affect one's own body, that's a little bit more acceptable to the scientists, but they don't realize that we're talking about the same thing as all these other things. So it really is incredible. The Russians, look how many years have they been doing, you know, consciousness studies, you know, in secret. I mean, there is a, like Tom said, I mean, we're taking baby steps, but 100 years from now, we could be doing so many things with our minds that we can't even imagine, you know.
Right, but I think other countries are going to speed ahead of the United States because we're just so locked into the material world that we're in.
How about our friend Hans, the German?
we can leave that.
Well, I mean, there were elements of that I could, you know, believe, but it's just the hokiness that ensued.
She's talking about the physical mediums, which are, you know, we've only seen one firsthand, so you can't judge them all by that.
No, I'm giving credit to the core group.
Yeah, I think though, if we're going to switch gears just a little bit into physical mediumship, that if we go back 100, 200 years, you know, that physical mediumship was really astounding, and what you see today has to be in the dark, or this is going to happen, and all this threatening stuff, and the spotters are somebody's wife, and there's too much nonsense for it to be believable, even if it's real.
There's too much
nonsense in there, and if they would take the nonsense away,
then
we could get a better idea of how it does really work, and that it does really work.
Yeah.
And they're making it difficult, not just for the physical medium, but for the mental mediums as well, because the word medium's in there. So right away, if you're being fraudulent, then therefore everybody else.
Everybody gets washed in with you.
Right.
Oh, definitely. Absolutely.
By the way, my mom recalling some of the episodes of visiting spiritualist churches and seances when she was younger, talked about the medium in the cabinet sitting with his feet in flour, because then... See if there were footprints. What if we all sat there with our feet in flour?
Yeah.
Kai's little wife.
Good idea. I like that idea.
One of the things that Taylor wrote about in this book, which I didn't know, was that Thomas Edison had a deathbed vision.
Oh, really?
And Edison's personal physician testified that Edison suddenly, as you know, before death, opened his eyes, his face lit up, and said, "It's very beautiful over there." Does that remind you of something that we recently experienced?
Yeah, Steve Jobs.
Oh, wow.
And the doctor later wrote, he said, "Must this question always remain hidden in the mystery of death?" So, I mean, he witnessed it. You know, there was no logical explanation, you know, for it. He believed it, but now he's questioning, you know, why does it have to be remain hidden?
I guess you could say the light bulb went on. Is that when the expression started, maybe?
Well, it certainly didn't before him.
Right. From that moment on.
But there is something in that, like, in the hidden in the mystery of death. I mean, a lot of people believe that death should remain a mystery and that we shouldn't be even talking about all these things, you know? So I mean,
is that back to the Seth Speaks, just some of those things you wouldn't even understand, so don't even try.
Yeah. Well, that too, and I think...
Seth went ahead and did try and explain it in different ways so that we could understand
it.
So, you know, it is. I believe it's for us to understand and to grow.
We have to meet them halfway. You know, that's the other thing. And people have to keep an open mind. I've told this story before about my brother, who's a medical doctor and a PhD. He does research and that sort of thing. And he was, of course... Oh, poo-pooing everything, and he was visiting once, and we put on a video that we had done of a reading with Laura Lynn Jackson, and he said, "Okay, as a scientist, you know, as a person who does a lot of experimenting in a lab, I will keep an open mind, and I will listen to the evidence." And at the end of the hour, he just shook his head and said, "There's no other explanation."
With tears streaming down his face.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes, it was.
That's yeah.
So, you know, it's it takes that. You know, a lot of people, like, think your mom included, is like, "Well, show me. And it's like, "Well, look. Don't ask to be shown. Look."
Right.
And I think one of the things that Taylor was also pointing out in the book is that, you know, these things have been happening for centuries. And the reports and all of these things, whether we're talking about the near-death experiences or deathbed visions or any of these end-of-life experiences, there's a consistency, you know, of light and beauty and peace and reuniting with loved ones. And so the fact that they're consistent, they've been happening for centuries, then leads one to believe that there's really not much to fear, you know? I think I don't think that any of us are going to be surprised when our time comes and that happens. I mean, do you? I mean, I opened up to the book he's talking about, and he gives an example in Plato, in Book 10 of Plato's classic, The Republic. Mm-hmm. We find a remarkable narrative which suggests that the near-death experience has been with us throughout history. Here the legendary philosopher recounts the tale of a Greek soldier named Er, apparently killed in battle, but who revived with scant minutes to go before his body was to be immolated in the funeral pyre. After awakening, Er described how his soul had gone out of his body and traveled to the deathly realms, where he had seen souls being judged by a display of their past deeds. However, he had been ordered to return to the land of the living and explain what he had seen to others.
Mm. Directive.
These were times. There certainly was no. There was Raymond Moody hadn't written a book in Plato's time. So there, it's encouraging when you see that these things are going all across, you know, the globe and for centuries before us. So I find it comforting. You know. I know you mentioned it, but I heard you mention it before, and he writes about these Pekindarian experiences.
Yes, that was a new term for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You remember what that was?
Well, it was a term used. Darien was not Darien, Connecticut, but
right.
Another country, but I can't recall now. It was experiments or something where they were exploring all of this, and then they coined the phrase Pekindarian just to, like, we coin other phrases of
right.
NDE. But, yeah, I bookmarked so much of this, but
yeah, well,
I don't remember which specific started it all.
They coined the term, you know, to explain when somebody sees a vision of a person that is known to be alive, and then later finds out that person died at the same moment, you know, that they saw the vision.
We hear that story a lot.
Yeah.
And it's that because was it along those lines when somebody's dying, they say they see so-and-so, but it's like, well, she's still alive. But then they find out, no,
right.
you know, at the same moment you were dying, she'd already
passed. And can anything be more evidential than that? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, how cool is that? How do you explain that in materialistic terms, you know?
Well, that, you know, comes to you were triggering a memory, and now it brings you right back to Lloyd's book, because his book centers around the pilot, the famous pilot, who visited with his friends like right before he passed, and then they were seeing, talking to him or smelling his cigar smoke right at the time that he was passing.
Cool. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to be talking more about the unseen world when we come back, so stay with us, and we'll be back after these words.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death, and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
Hello, my name's Piero Calvi Parisetti, MD. I invite you to discover my video course on Evidence for Life After Life, a professional counseling resource for the bereaved and the dying.
Transform the fear of death, heal the pain of a loss by learning about life after life.
For more information and a free preview, visit www.drparisetti.com. That's Dr. Parisetti in one word.
Does consciousness survive death? Can technology be used to interact with the deceased? Can hearing from the dead heal the living? At the Wind Bridge Institute, we are working to answer these and similar questions. Through our studies with certified research mediums, we are examining psychic abilities and communication with the other side, offering insights into the limitless nature of consciousness and unlocking the possibilities of our bodies, minds, and spirits. Be a part of it. Become a WindBridge member today. Please visit www.windbridge.org to learn more.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation. at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
And welcome back to the gathering. We're talking about we're having a discussion about a book review, Stop Worrying, There Probably Is an Afterlife, by Greg Taylor. One of the things that Greg also goes into is these terminal lucidity cases. I didn't even know he calls, some people call it lightning. I could see why.
Yeah.
Where people that are suddenly, people that are terminally ill, and quite debilitated physically and mentally in a period of time near their death, have this awakening of clear, lucid thinking, which amazes medical staff and family, and there's no explanation for it.
You had that personal experience.
Yeah, I mean, I've witnessed that too, and it really is, to me, what intrigues me about it is that you can't explain it away people will try, but in a medical sense. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have somebody that's in has dementia or is teetering on between being awake and not awake, like in a semi-comatose state, and it's been like that consistently, maybe sometimes for months, and like there's no hope, and then to have a sudden conversation, you know, and have clear memory of all these things is you just can't explain it.
And that comes close to the actual passing.
Right.
So it seems to me that it'll kind of ties into everything we've been talking about tonight, is that when you're close to passing, you're kind of straddling both sides, that your energy is getting ready to exit the body, and you have as we saw with Steve Jobs and Thomas Edison, that you can sometimes physically see where you're going. And I think in a certain sense that is that when you get the energy that is going to be your forever energy, you kind of look back and go, oh, if I'd only known the things I could have done. You know, when we were talking before, all the stuff that I had in my abilities that I never even touched, and here I'm about to leave the planet, and I could go back and, I can go back and just talk normally for a couple of minutes if I feel like it, you know. And
so they do.
And they do. And then they, you know, you go over to the other side and go, Jesus, maybe I should go back. Maybe next time I can actually use the body that I was given, you know, and that sort of thing.
I think one of the most remarkable stories in there was a young woman who from birth was so severely handicapped, she couldn't speak or do anything. And then she was dying, and suddenly she was singing. And this woman had never uttered a single word before, and now had broken into song.
you probably was listening to the music that nobody else heard, right?
But that's the other thing, just to validate that. People go to mediums after somebody has passed from some crazy disease or debilitating accident or something like that, and the first thing that they say when they connect for them is they're dancing again, or they're whole again, or they're not crippled anymore. Mm-hmm. So that makes sense. It all, that's what's happening. So I think, Tom, you're absolutely right. They're teetering both worlds, and they get this energy, this vision, this glimpse, whatever it is, of who their whole soul really is, and they say, okay, let me just put that into being here one last time so I can set things straight,
yeah.
Which is usually what they do,
yeah.
You know, and then they're gone.
Yeah, I think that I was reading one of the accounts there, and the comment was, you know, get me out of this disgusting body.
You know, isn't that it, though?
That's it, you know, I mean, you know, you've already seen what's ahead of you, so,
yeah.
You know,
I think... there were some accounts here of this Australian palliative care centers. They were doing some studies, and there was one patient. He was in a severely weakened state. He needed two people to care for him, and all of a sudden he just started talking. He sat bolt upright in his bed, and there was something very unusual because he was pre-terminal. He was about to check out. He was looking over towards the doorway. And he was talking to the doorway, and I felt myself another presence in the room. And I said to him, who are you talking to? And he said, oh, that's my brother. And when the patient finished his conversation, he lay back down like he didn't have any strength to hold himself up any longer, and that, you know, when he passed.
Yeah.
You know, and we would say, clearly, your brother was there to take him.
We always hear that from
yeah.
mediums that...
Yeah.
That your family members are there to welcome you on the other side, your loved ones.
A band of angels coming for to carry me home.
Oh, right. Great song.
Yeah. And, of course, he also talks about near-death experiences in depth and specifically the life review. And most people know what we're talking about, you know, where you see this motion picture and... it seems to you go through your whole life and feel everything that you've done, your actions and how they affected others, good and bad. And it seems like it's an eternity, but in physical time, it's only like a minute or two.
Yeah.
So when people have a life review, how do you think that happens? I know we can't put it into physical terms, but how can you even describe what happens? I mean, do you...
Only from that movie with Albert Brooks.
Oh, that is hysterical, but that's kind of true.
He got to see everything replayed.
Well, and this, we mentioned the Seth books, too. That was a theme in the Seth books, is that if you're not looking back at your life necessarily, because everything happens at once.
All at once.
So you're just going to the place where your childhood... is going happening, and you go and you look at that, and then you go to the place where your adolescence and your adult life, you know, so they're all still functioning, only, you know, we just don't perceive them. And that's one of those things that Seth said, you cannot understand.
I try to explain it to you.
Right.
You're not going to.
Because when you try to make sense of it, you know, so are people... Are they going into other realms, you know, where past, present, and future are all happening at once and they're seeing it? Or, you know, is the universe feeding this information to them more in a spiritual sense?
I look at it the exact opposite way.
Yeah.
Is that the universe exists,
right.
Everything all going on at once, and we're in this obstructed space.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So we have the stops of time and space, and that's what's restricting us. And I think when mediums or people who meditate or extremely spiritual people who could go out of body, they're the ones that are breaking down that barrier, that time and space restriction in their mind. They're changing the way they view the physical barriers, and so they're able to circumvent them.
That's like you remember that book, The Unobstructed Universe, Stuart White or something. I forgot, but that was
right. Stuart White.
Yeah, the same concept.
There was a lovely phrase I had jotted down from the story. It was become more accepting of what the dying report, and one woman called it reflections of a setting sun, which was a nice way to view it rather than end of life.
Mm. I mean, clearly, he talks about it in this book, and we talk about it all the time. That we see the value in sharing personal experiences, because that's helpful. But at the same time, you often wonder if that if the sharing in some people can foster some despair, because they're hearing all these personal experiences, but they never had any themselves, or they never recognized it. So they sort of feel, it's sort of like a jealousy thing, right? You're having these. Why not me?
Right, and then you get into the self-doubt, and maybe my loved one didn't love me enough to come back, all that sort of thing. My mom had a story that we have on video of being asleep in her chair and being awoken, and there was her husband kneeling by her chair, smiling up at her, looking much younger than he had before he passed, and it was just a wonderful, wonderful experience. And her takeaway was that, well, when's he coming back?
Never enough.
It is never enough. And that's why people keep, psychic junkies and that sort of thing, that they'll go back to mediums over and over again. Because, when you're sitting there with the medium and they're good and they're getting stuff right on the money, there's nothing like the feeling. You feel comforted and you feel warm and you feel the love. And then you go away into the mundane world and say, did that really happen? And you start to, all the doubts come in, so you want to run right back and get that feeling again.
Yeah. Instead of exploring it yourself and trying to work on having the experiences yourself.
Exactly.
Which, is a much finer quality, and maybe it is what it's all about. Maybe that's what we're encouraged to do. If we go back in time, before we could speak even, we were all communicating telepathically, so why can't we return to that?
Yeah.
We probably can. We just need to relearn how to do it.
Yeah.
Well, I also think, when we talk about people not getting these communications and signs, and I see it from the other perspective, where there are these people on the other side, the deceased that are trying and trying and trying to get through, and they're not having success.
Right.
I don't know if there's frustration on the other side, but
yeah.
Well, that's you hear that from mediums all the time. That I woke up this morning and there's this guy in my bathroom saying, "You gotta tell this person, you gotta." And that show, the Ghost Whisperer, was all about that. That she was every week there's a spirit that was jumping on her back and saying, "Come on, you gotta go with me. You gotta go with me." And she said, "Okay, let's go."
But like Bob said, I hate to think. I can't envision spirit getting impatient or angry or.
Yeah, so I think we have to remove that element.
Well, Hollywood stuff.
They're not
impatient. They're not angry. They just say that, here's somebody who's going to be in the same room with my loved one. I'm going to go and visit them and say, "Hey, while you're there,
patiently knocking. I'm just going to keep knocking till you answer the door."
And they have unlimited patience.
We've spoken about this before, where very likely the same way we here might go to a medium to make the connection to the deceased person on the other side, the deceased person on the other side may also have a medium or an intermediary that they use. As well, we don't know.
Well, you do hear that in readings many times, where I say, "Well, I've got this one coming through, and they're bringing this one,
and they're bringing
that one." So, yeah, you do have intermediates on both sides.
Well, may utilize mediums as a last resort. They try. Okay, now I need some help.
How many birds do I have to have? How many pennies do I have to throw before you're going to say, "Hey, that's me"?
Well, think it's time to wrap it up.
I heard one today about dead birds, so.
Oh.
That was the sign.
Oh, the sign, you mean when
the
they saw
sign
dead birds,
was a dead bird each time. I thought that was a little creepy and spooky, but okay. I'm ready. We now ask our listeners to please join us in our healing energy circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of the recovery of physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Karen Gould, Stanley Mullen, Glenna Irwin, Michael Tim, David Haith, Mary Ann Pierzga, Donna Mello, Matt Mello, Fred Feinstein, James Rafferty, Doreen Malloy, Diane Archangel, Joan Lipke, and Maya. Now let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.